Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. Everybody's having entirely too good a time, and I want it to stop immediately.
It stopped a long time ago.
If I can't have a good time, nobody can have a good time. All right. We're going to have a continue the public hearing and on House Bill 2533, because I promised people they could talk on this, but I don't want to hear very much on this. So with that, we've got Dana and Justin. Justin, are you here? Come on up and keep your comments to open a public hearing on House Bill 2533.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Dana Hepper. I'm the Advocacy Director for Stand for Children, and we're supporting both of the key provisions of this bill, the Portland Gap Bond, which I'll let Justin share with you very briefly, and the piece that folds in a handful of small rural high schools into the small rural funding formula that aren't there simply because they became small after a specified date in the law, which was irrelevant to whether or not they need a small amount of weighted formula funding in order to meet the needs of their kids. So I think I'm just happy to answer any questions.
And we heard excellent testimony on this yesterday. Mr. Martin.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Martin. I'm here today on behalf of Portland Public Schools. You have some fact sheets in front of you, so I would just say we're enthusiastically in support of House Bill 2533, and free to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? No questions. Thank you. Now we'll hear from Pleasant Hill.
On the radio. Very quickly, Madam Chair, I'm Alex Kyler. I am a budget committee member for the Pleasant Hill School District, and we did make a recommendation on our budget just the other night. On the House side, there was some concern about, well, what are small schools doing to help themselves, and I just wanted to tell you that in Pleasant Hill, we did actually just close an elementary school that's been in existence for decades, and so it was a pretty hard thing for the community to go through. So we are taking steps to consolidate the school district, and we hope to save about $150,000 a year through that school closure, but nonetheless very tough for the district. We are facing a certainly an uncertain future with a shrinking population, and we would very much appreciate the passage of this important bill for us.
Thank you very much. Questions? No questions. Close the public hearing. Open the work session on House Bill 2533. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2533A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 2533A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. I will carry the bill. Now, we're going to continue the work session on House Bill 2472 today, the Betsy Credit Bill. This has been an evolving process. I will just want to tell the audience that after yesterday's work session, where we saw some of the impacts of the proposed conservation amendment going from 10% to 20%, when we saw the impact on the trucking program, the diesel program, we decided not to do anything with that particular part. So if anyone is here concerned about that part of the amendment, I've already talked to Mr. Russell, that is no longer in play on this bill. But the other parts of the amendment are still in play. So at this time, I'm going to open a work session again on House Bill 2472. Chris. Do you have anything to add?
I don't have anything to add.
Chris has nothing to add. So we will hear from Arlo Corwin and Kevin Lynch, who wanted to say a few words. To the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Kevin Lynch from Iberdrola Renewables. I'll say a few words, and I gave you a couple of pieces of paper, too, that'll more fully describe a couple of the comments that I have for you. For those of you who don't know my company, we have built about 750 megawatts of wind power, or been responsible for the building of it, just here in Oregon alone, since 2001. Most of that has been since 2006, 2007, and we have about 200 megawatts more that we are hoping to break ground on and actually finish this year. And I believe that is the majority of the wind that has been built here in the state. And it's about 25 or 30% of our portfolio of wind projects around the U.S. We have our corporate headquarters here in Portland, and we have about 400 employees in the state, and I think two-thirds to three-quarters of them are involved in our wind business. We're also involved in developing biomass and solar projects. In fact, I wore my solar tie today just also to keep my disposition sunny. We are here to do renewable energy in the U.S. over the long term. I wanted to talk about two provisions in particular in the amendments that are pending before you. One would be the effects of the reduction in the maximum size of the BETC credit available for projects like those that we've been developing and plan to continue. And the second is the effective date. First of all, a number of you over the last couple of days have asked for information, comparative information, if you will, on where Oregon stands with respect to the tax incentives that it provides, particularly this particular credit. And I guess I would ask you to look at our tax position and how various taxes affect renewable energy investments more holistically than just looking at the BETC itself. There are three basic areas of taxation. You know this better than I because you do the Revenue Committee for a living. There's income tax, there's sales tax, and there's property tax. And you'll have in the statement before you a chart that I prepared based on our real-world experience in developing wind projects on both sides of the Columbia River, literally almost across the water from each other. In Klickitat County, Washington, we don't pay income tax, of course, in Washington State. Excuse me. Washington has, as you know, a steep sales tax, but renewable energy equipment is exempt from that and will be so for another 2 years. 2 years for the 2 years after that, 75% of the cost of renewable energy equipment will be exempt from the sales tax. And then there's property tax. And the rate that we are taxed for property for our wind project in Klickitat County is substantially lower than the effective property tax rate that we have for our wind projects in the various counties that we have in Oregon. And this is the case notwithstanding the fact that we have reached strategic investment program agreements with the various counties and taxing districts in Sherman County and Gillam County where we have built our projects in Oregon. So if you look at this all holistically, we pay the same, roughly. We sometimes do pay income taxes in Oregon, by the way, or have the BETC credits reduce our income tax liability. But from the standpoint of the two taxes that are most relevant to this, property and sales, we pay the same on sales tax, zero. We pay less in property tax in Washington than in Oregon, and the credit, the BETC credit, offsets that difference on the property tax side. Now, as the chart before you indicates, where the BETC is set now provides Oregon with an advantage over Washington in terms of tax burden. And it's an important issue because, by and large, developing a wind project in Oregon and developing one in Washington, where they have been developed to date and where the opportunities are, at least in the near future, things are pretty comparable. The wind, more or less, is the same resource. It blows about the same, consistently on both sides of the river. The markets that we sell into are the same. We sell to the same utilities, whether a project's in Oregon or in Washington. The transmission access to get to a market is about the same. And the siting laws in both states and local jurisdictions are comparable as well. There are challenges, but it's not impossible. It's not like trying to site a wind project in California. It's actually achievable here in Oregon as it is in Washington. So I think I hope that's a useful comparison of the tax liabilities in the two states. You know, the math that I came up with is that if you wanted to put both states on an entirely equal footing in this respect, the way that that would happen for comparable projects of about 100 megawatts apiece would be to reduce the cap on the credit from the current $20 million to about 14 or 15, which, interestingly enough, is about where the House passed bill is at. So I'm happy to answer any questions on that chart before you or how that works for our company, but I thought that would be useful. The second issue is on the effective date that's in the amendments before you. And I guess I'd have a couple of things to say about that. There was a lot of discussion yesterday in this committee and during the work session on when a company or a developer ought to apply for the tax credit. And if you read the rules that the Department of Energy has promulgated to implement the BETCI, and if you think about it logically, the BETCI application is actually something that does and should come fairly late in the development process. It takes about 7 years from the point at which somebody like Arlo or one of my colleagues in the development side of the business looks at a wind map and says, there's an interesting piece of property here. It looks like the wind data is pretty good. Let's go out and talk to the landowner about whether he or she might be interested in siting wind farm there, to the point in which the project is actually constructed. About 7 years. The Department of Energy has an interest in knowing with some specificity what it is that they would be providing a tax credit for. And so, for example, very specifically, we have to have our permits in hand, whether they're federal, state, or local, or a waiver from them. But basically, we have to have our FSEC certificate or our CUP from county government or our permission from the BLM or the Forest Service in hand before we apply for preliminary certification. Well, that doesn't happen until very late in the development process. And so the rules now, as they stand, basically require you to apply for the preliminary certification before you break ground on a project. So it's relatively late in the process. And that's what we've all been operating under. And I guess what I would tell you is if you want to reach back on the effective date of the new requirements that are contained in this bill and apply them to projects that are already in the hopper, it really creates an inequity for those of us who have pending applications for preliminary certification. We've been following the rules that the state of Oregon has set out, and they're logical. And if you change that now and said, well, maybe you should have applied earlier when it doesn't really make sense under the rules, it will create an inequity. It would vastly, I know for projects that we have pending, it would vastly change the economics of the projects. Probably, I'm quite sure, call into question whether we would have made these investment decisions at all. So I guess I would ask the committee to consider that if you want to make changes to this law and reduce the size of the credit and impose other requirements, please don't do it to projects that are already somewhere in the process. And by changing the effective date, perhaps, for projects that for which an application has not been submitted by whatever date you want to choose, the date of enactment or the date that's in the bill now or something like that, rather than an effective date if a project has not received its preliminary certification yet, that would be a much preferable way to go. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions?
I have one, Mr. Chair. So you, on your chart, you don't show the gross receipts tax, which Washington has. Are you exempt from that, too?
Chair Burdick, Senator Rosenbaum, as I understand it, I asked that question of my tax experts, and as I understand it, because we sell energy from our Washington projects outside of the state of Washington, we sell it to another entity outside, we are not subject to the B&O or the gross receipts tax that Washington has.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you. I apologize for leaving. They've got my two committees. Every committee is closed. There are only two committees open. I serve on both of them, and they meet concurrently. So my apologies to you and the audience. And thank you for – I wanted to thank you, Mr. Lynch, for the data you've provided and the analytical expertise you brought to this process. You've been a very constructive participant. My question was, if the property tax – is what makes it uncompetitive, whether that would be something that would be negotiable under your SIPs in the counties where you're located?
Chair Burdick, that's a very good question, and the answer is yes, they are negotiable. Our experience, I used a midpoint data point on that chart to describe our experience with the counties in the SIP agreements that we have reached with them. We've done, I think, three or four at this point, and the range of agreements when we levelize the cost over a 15-year period of time range from roughly $3 per megawatt hour to $5 per megawatt hour. So I took roughly a midpoint and one that is an actual real live figure from an agreement that we reached with one of the counties. Of course, we would like them to be lower, and not surprisingly, some of the earlier ones that we have done were lower, but now that the business is more popular and the counties and the local taxing districts are understandably putting us under more pressure to have the number be higher.
They probably are, and probably, don't you think there's been some hydraulics with the credit itself, since you're getting such a large credit that there would be, they would feel more free to put that kind of pressure on?
Chair Burdick, I don't know that in particular. I've only been partly party to one of the negotiations on it. Probably a fair question to ask some of the county commissioners.
Okay, and then the other question I had was when Washington, the sales tax exemption goes to 75% in 2011, and where will that put you on in terms of your chart here?
Chair Burdick, I knew you were going to ask me that question because I don't have that number directly in front of me. My recollection is that if you brought the credit, the Betsy credit, down after the effective date of the change in Washington State is July 1, 2011, so approximately 2 years from now. If you brought it down, my recollection is to somewhere in the $3 to $4 million range, then that would be about equivalent, all things being equal, if the price of the equipment is roughly the same then as it is today, to pick up that 25% taxation on the Washington sales tax rate.
So you're talking about $3 to $4 million, the actual value of the credit?
Of the credit, that's correct.
Okay. All right. And again, I apologize for missing part of your testimony. Power that you sell, you said you sold it outside of Washington, and the windmills that you have in Oregon, where does that power go?
Chair Burdick, it goes to different customers. I can tell you across all of the projects that we have, I know I have a list here someplace, some of the power is sold to customers in Oregon and some is sold outside, and I just happen to find it. We sell to the Bonneville Power Administration. We sell to Portland General Electric. We sell to Eugene Water and Electric Board. We sold an entire project, not just the power, but lock, stock, and barrel. We sold to Pacific Corp. We also sell to Pacific Gas and Electric in San Francisco. A number of the public agencies, the municipal utilities and the like in California. And we sell to the Snohomish PUD, which is around Everett, Washington, Seattle City Light, Avista, and I think that covers all of them. Yeah. So some inside of Oregon and some outside. And that's the nature of our business. It's a competitive market, as Commissioner Savage described yesterday. And we look for buyers here, or else we compete in all the RFPs that the Oregon utilities put out. Sometimes we win, sometimes we lose.
But you would also expect your market and the demand to grow with the RPS phasing in.
Chair Burdick, yes. I think Commissioner Savage described that well yesterday, that the Oregon RPS, the Washington RPS, the California RPS will all drive an increase in demand for power in the region, but frankly, in a couple of years. A lot of the utilities are near or at their requirement for the first compliance number in the state RPSs. In Washington, they're virtually there. In Oregon, they're pretty close, and the first deadline, I believe, is 2011. California is off, really. They don't have to do much until 2013 at this point. So the near-term window is, again, Commissioner Savage, I think, spoke well to this yesterday, that the near-term window for demand for new renewable electricity is probably softer than it may be farther out.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there other questions from the committee? Mr. Corwin, I'm going to hold you off on your testimony and take one of my colleagues, Tobias Reed, Representative Reed from the Oregon House of Representatives and a member of the House Revenue Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Tobias Reed, State Representative from District 27. Happy to be before my State Senator as well. I just wanted to thank you for taking up this issue. I feel like it's a bit of you're embarking on a journey I've already taken to some extent, and I certainly don't speak for all of the members of the House Revenue Committee, but I wanted to commend you for taking up what I think is a really important issue. And certainly in our current budget environment, all of our expenditures deserve a lot of scrutiny. So I'm glad you're taking that on. But I also wanted to encourage you to be careful about it. I think we have created a program that works well. Obviously, the House Revenue Committee and the House has examined and made some changes in the bill that we passed to you, and I think that's a good place to start. I don't want to lose sight of the fact that the program is doing a lot of good things, creating jobs, bringing about the sort of change that I think we want in this state as we seek to transform to a clean energy economy. And it really is it's part of a unique opportunity that I don't think is going to remain with us too far down the road. There is an interesting article in the New Yorker a few weeks ago on their financial page that related the story of across several businesses and came to the conclusion that the times of challenge when there are economic bits of economic turmoil, the successful companies in this case are the ones who maintain their focus and maintain their dedication to innovation, to taking market share. And I think those lessons can be applied to a certain extent as we look at the challenges that we face with our budgets, with our tax policy. I don't think we want to lose sight of where we want to go. So I would encourage you to keep those things in mind as you embark on your discussion here, and appreciate your willingness to hear me and to take it on. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And thank you. This is a good opportunity for us to thank you as well for the work you started on this program and some of the changes that you made over in the House. I think will really really improve this program and are really not under discussion here because you did such a good job. Thank you. Do you need to take off, or did you want to?
I'd like to listen, if that's okay.
Perfect. Any questions of Representative Reed before we move
Madam
on?
Chair?
Senator Rosenbaum.
Hi, and good to see one of my former colleagues. I just wanted to ask, so I think you correctly identified why we're looking at this. I just wonder why or how you arrived at the bill as it came over, because it is difficult to evaluate what the tipping point is where, if you drop any lower, you're going to lose these projects.
Senator Rosenbaum, I think that's an excellent question, and there's always danger in attributing motivations to others, but I can say for myself that what convinces me of the approach that we passed to you is that I think it strikes an appropriate balance of trying to make sure that we're making good use of our common resources in ways that will benefit the whole, in trying to get, just I think as you said, to the tipping point about projects that wouldn't otherwise happen. And I think it's important to think, I've heard some people say, well, eventually they would happen in Oregon. And that may be true, but I think the sequence is important to consider. We want things happening in Oregon first. We want to be leaders. It's not merely about a physical location of a piece of infrastructure, but more of that demand, I think, in a market generates more interest in Oregon. It increases the likelihood that we can be a center of research and development so that we're creating the next generations of technology that get exported to the rest of the country and the world. So I think it matters not only that we make this transition, but that we take advantage of the opportunity that's before us right now.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Next.
Great. Thank you. My name is Arlo Corwin. I'm the Western Regional Development Director for Horizon Wind Energy. So I oversee the development efforts of Horizon everywhere west of the Front Range. So I'll take just a couple minutes to talk about really just two key aspects of this legislation, the first being the size of the credit itself, and then the second being the retroactive nature. First off, with I think Mr. Lynch really hit it on the head, and he provided some great numbers, which really do show the benefit of the credit, what we do see in terms of the actual value of the credit. We have, as a company, we have 300 operating megawatts in the state of Oregon, I think just behind Iberdrola, and then in Washington across the river, we actually don't have any operating megawatts right now, though in interest of full disclosure, we did build a project, Wild Horse, which we sold lock, stock, and barrel, as Mr. Lynch says. But the Betsy has been tremendously effective in making sure that Oregon does stay competitive and really a leader in getting projects built in the state. The table that you have before you, I think, is fairly telling, and it shows that right now Oregon is seventh in terms of installed capacity, but in terms of potential from a wind resource perspective, the state is ranked 23rd. So it's really the strong policy environment that has really helped, that actually drew our company here in 2001. So the Betsy has really been a key piece of helping us build projects in the state. And then to Mr. Tobias's point about the sequencing, I just want to emphasize how important that is. The lines that we have in Oregon are the same ones that we interconnect to in Washington, and the transmission that we're offered is a finite resource. We have a period of time. If we connect a project in Oregon, that may preclude us from developing a project across the river in Washington. So I don't want that to go unnoticed, that the sequencing is an extremely important point. And getting projects in the ground first in a state may actually be the only opportunity to get them in. So while they may come down the road, they may not as well, because the transmission is really the limiting factor in getting projects built within the region. And then the second point I'll make is the retroactive nature of the proposed legislation. And I'll tell you a little bit kind of how we, when we model projects in our company, the most important thing for us, like many other businesses, is the certainty that something will be there. Like Mr. Lynch said, we have about a 7-year period from the day we first meet with a landowner, first think about a project, till that project actually becomes a commercial operating entity. And over that 7-year period, we need to have that certainty. We begin modeling that project as soon as we start getting wind data from our Met Towers. And in addition to the actual legislation itself impacting, having the potential to impact current contracts, what it also does is send a shockwave through our company, through the wind industry, that, hey, the Betsy program may not be what we think it is when we actually get this project in the ground. Now, we know it may not be the same in 7 years, but if we see this retroactive change to projects that are this close or this committed, it really undermines our ability, our company's ability, to rely on the Betsy in our model. So a retroactive nature, while it may not seem to be a huge change for folks on the other side of the table, for certain folks looking from the outside, to us it's a significant change because it really undermines the program and our ability to rely on that revenue. Those are my key points. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Sorry, I came right in the middle of this again. You mentioned retroactive. What do you mean by retroactive?
As I understand it, the legislation proposes to retroactively amend the BETCY to the pre-certification phase. Is it June 1st? June 1st of this year. And the point I was making is that that has, in addition to the impacting current contracts that may have already been committed to, it sends a shockwave through our company in terms of what future change might be.
In terms of your company, have the completed applications been filed?
Our company, we have two pre-certifications which we're waiting on. So it actually, I don't think we have any pending pre-certify, but what it would do is, even though it wouldn't affect us, maybe our direct bottom line for these projects, what it would do is affect our ability to, our company's view on the reliance on the program in the future. If this happened this session, what could happen next session? We filed for pre-certification, I want to say, in January of 2008, and we actually received that pre-certification in December. So it took a full year to go through to get that far.
Well, you do understand that this is a tax credit and it's not an entitlement.
Yes.
I mean, any state that has a tax credit, you have the same situation where it can be changed at certain times.
Yes.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. I need to take off.
You have to go vote, too?
Okay. Not vote, but discuss. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Reed.
Thank you.
But in terms of your own situation, your pre-certifications are already complete, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And there's no iteration of this bill that I would see as having any impact on those.
That's correct, right. Okay. That's your understanding as well.
Okay. All right. Any other questions, Senator Morris?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question focuses on the financial side of this equation. If you assume a Class 4 site, which I understand most of the sites up there are Class 4, reasonably close to the distribution grid, what kind of internal rate of return do you expect on these projects? assuming your 50% and your $20 million cap.
Chair Burdick, Senator Morse, that's proprietary. I'd be happy to discuss that with you in another venue. But it's, you know, rough order of magnitude, several hundred basis points above our cost of capital. And remember, we make these commitments. This is an investment up front for about a 20-year to 30-year project, and we usually sell the power on a 15 to 20-year fixed-price basis. So what we calculate up front, we're already learning this, is usually the best-case scenario. Things tend to come up in that intervening 20-year period that erode the returns.
And we're as direct competitors as two companies could be. I mean, we're in a very similar position. We have similar lenders and similar rates of return, I would assume, as you would roll.
More questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Do we have anybody else who wants to talk on this? Jody Weiser. Up here.
Can't speak from there.
Our sound system is not adequate to do that.
Jody Weiser, for the record. I'd like to talk about the trucking issue, and you said that conversation was closed, but we spent several hours last night exploring it, and there's some information I'd like to share. So would you want to reopen that discussion or not?
No.
Okay.
Sorry. Any other discussion on... One more person. I'll just have to say, if I'd known you were going to do that, I would have headed you off at the pass, so I apologize.
Welcome. For the record, my name is Tammy Denny. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Wheat Growers League, and I just feel compelled to say, for the record, that I have several producers who have been innovators in embracing the business energy tax credit as it passed out of the 2007 session. And I understand from the chair's position that the business energy tax credits are not entitlements, but we do really believe that the policy of the state going forward should be just that, going forward. So our growers who have been innovators can look forward to policy changes and future projects, as opposed to those projects that they have currently in the works being negatively impacted. And I do have one producer who has advised me that he may lose upwards of $17 million should this Betsy program be retroactively affected. So it could mean the difference between him being viable and remaining in business and not. Though I don't believe that's the intention of this committee, to cause our producers, our agricultural producers, who were the ones who came to the table and embraced these policies out of the 07 session, creating biofuels and wind turbines on private property. So I just want to say that for the record, that I hope we give every consideration to our ag producers who have invested themselves in these programs.
Was this a wind program?
Yes, ma'am, it is.
And is this something that the application is that has already been filed?
Yes, the application has been filed. There are apparently some issues as to some of the paperwork and its status, so it's not complete. So it is apparently being hung up for some particular reexamination.
Okay. Just so the audience knows, that we're taking a look at revising the amendment to deal with situations like this where people have invested money and have, are either at the application, have submitted an application that's complete, or on the verge of a completed application, and cutting them some slack as to the amount of the Betsy, but still requiring that the requirements that for pre-certification in the new bill, which are far superior to the old system, would be in effect. And so that's we are paying attention to this sort of situation that you mentioned, and it sounds like we're on the right track for your situation.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Telford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On that note, when you say they're not complete, mostly glitches, a misunderstanding, or how close to being complete is that application?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, members of the committee, my understanding is prior to Director Graney's departure from the Department of Energy, there were ongoing conversations about this particular package and about the turbines that had been cited, about the number of projects and the partnerships that were part of this wind turbine project over in ECHO. And some of that continues to be discussed even as early as this last week. So there continue to be discussions with Department of Energy as to how best to move forward with these particular projects and with their certifications and the paperwork. But the towers are in place. I just took a group of business leaders from Eastern Oregon through that project about 3 weeks ago. So we've seen with our own eyes that those wind turbines are in place and they're getting ready to generate power.
Senator Telfer, follow up then. Did you get pre-cert on that?
Well, Senator Telfer, members of the committee, I'm not close enough to the project to be able to give you more detail, but I'd be glad to give you the name of the producer who's involved, and I know he'd be glad to share with you in detail his specific circumstances.
Thank you. More questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Joe Esmond wants to testify.
Just briefly.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joe Esmond. I'm a member of the IBW Local 48. I handle politics and green stuff. To be Sam, I am. Green eggs and ham. I just want to bring in that the fact that this is going to affect, I have 500 people out of work. I have 13, probably pushing more like 1,500 trained electricians in the IBW in the state of Oregon and solar above and beyond. I know I got an email from one of our large contractors this morning along the lines of what the hell's going on. Excuse my French. $5 million worth of projects which he has scheduled, they have scheduled, will be affected. And quite without naming names, I'm looking at another, I don't know, 8-10 megawatts of solar that can be installed working with the feds and with Betsy. So please reconsider your considerations. Thank you for your time.
Thank
you. Any questions?
Thank you very much. Do we have anybody else who wanted to testify? Okay, I am being called again to vote, so I'm going to end the agony here, close the work session on House Bill 2472, and we will keep rolling this over. We're going to have a new amendment reflecting some of the changes that we've referred to today. So we will post this for tomorrow, but we are on 1 hour notice, so please check the agendas to see, you know, for those of you who are following it, check it right before the time, because things are very much in flux right now. So we are adjourned.